everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Railway Mania. It's been a little while, but I'm back. This is a bit of an odd one. I'm going to talk to you about ovoids, my first experience with using ovoids. So this is manufactured coal. It's not just coal that you dig up out of the ground. It's something that's been made specifically for use in home fires and steam locomotives and heritage of all kinds. Let's start by talking about my role and where I was working. This was last weekend. It was on a Saturday. I'm a volunteer at the Bristol Harbour Railway, which is part of Emshed Museum in Bristol. Now, this isn't a typical preserved railway. It is part of a museum, and it's an industrial railway. It runs along the quayside in the centre of the city, and it has a few unusual challenges. Some might say it was a unique operation. I don't really know of many other places that are like it, other than perhaps Chatham Dockyard, but they don't currently carry passengers. I've been volunteering at the Bristol Harbour Railway for on and off over 10 years. In the past few years, I've been putting a lot of time into trying to get qualifications. So I'm a qualified guard there and I'm a trainee fireman. So my experience with firing in general has been very limited. I've only fired on a larger preserved railway once or twice, but I have had quite a bit of experience on this site specifically. And as the operation is fairly routine, you kind of get into a bit of a rhythm with it. So I'll just explain how that bit works first before I move into my actual experience of using the ovoids. There's two lines at Bristol Harbour Railway. Both of them start from the station outside the museum at Emshed. The sheds are called M and L because that's what they were called during port days. There are four electric cranes on the quayside outside the museum, and then there's a steam crane further down as you get down the line. And we also have three boats that are preserved as part of the working exhibit. So there's a good variety of stuff. The operations are roughly every other weekend in the summer. Sometimes you'll do weekends back to back, depending on where bank holidays fall. On the other weekends, there'll be the cranes operating or the boats operating. So there's always something going on. There's a lot of variety. We have two operational steam locomotives, both built in Bristol and both previously owned by the Port of Bristol Authority. So we have an Avonside called Portbury, which was built in 1917 and was actually built for the war effort and then sold to the Port of Bristol Authority and worked at Avonmouth Docks, where it gained the name Portbury. And then we have Henbury, which is a Peckett 060 that was built in 1937. So it's quite a late build by comparison. And that has been owned by the same people its whole life. It was built for the Port Authority, which was part of Bristol Corporation. Then it got folded into Bristol Museums when the Port Authority got rid of their steam fleet, earmarked for preservation, moved around a little bit, and then in 1978 came to live at the Harbour Railway, where it's worked ever since. So one owner from new. The train is always operated as a fixed set. That's part of how we're regulated. That's part of our rules and operations. We don't run round the train at each end. We have three passenger carrying wagons. The first one is a towed brake van, which arrived at the same time as Henbury. And originally it was just brake van rides in the yard because the yard was still operated by the Western Coal Company at the time that the museum first opened. So the brake van rides were fairly limited. Actual length of the line was quite short. There wasn't much called for people to travel to the centre of Bristol to walk around an industrial estate as it was at the time. The towed goes at the opposite end of the train to the locomotive. Then you have the turbot wagon, which is a bogie wagon, originally built as a ballast carrier. It's had a completely rebuilt body, so you don't have the body of the original turbot. It does look kind of similar, but there are no hinged doors anymore. You have two sliding doors that you use to lock in place for when you're carrying passengers. Then you have a conflat wagon, which is a custom-built metal body on top, which we also use for carrying passengers. All of these are vacuum-fitted. It's the correct length for what we're doing because we have some quite sharp turns and limited visibility. If you made the train any longer, then the driver would no longer be able to see the guard. So, the locomotive supplies the vacuum. The guard at the other end of the train travels in the brake van. In one direction, when you're operating with one locomotive, the locomotive is propelling the train. Therefore, the guard and the driver need to have line of sight on each other. The guard holds a green flag out of the brake van, which indicates to the driver of the train that they can move. If the flag is pulled in, the driver must stop immediately. The guard also has two brakes at their disposal, so two vacuum valves where they can let air into the vacuum pipe and apply the brakes immediately. There's also the handbrake in the brake van and the steam brake on the locomotive. When you're operating with two locomotives, as we do sometimes when the locomotives swap over, we might get lucky and have top and tail trains. So you have an engine pulling in each direction. The engines always face west because that means that the driver and the guard are on the same side of the engine. Starting at Emshed, we have a small station, which is a metal platform. The line runs down the quayside, past the four electric cranes, and for about half a mile goes around a long sweeping right-hand bend and arrives at the SS Great Britain Halt, which is a more substantial structure. It has a proper platform and a run-round loop and was established a long time ago when the line used to just run up and down the quayside. In the early 90s, the museum got the chance to purchase the old coal line going down towards Ashton Gate, which means now that the running line is a Y shape. So we have half a mile in one direction and about a mile and a half in the other direction. The track that peels off goes through the yard, under a bridge, and then down the riverbank and to the old bonded warehouses within sight of Clifton Suspension Bridge, which is a fairly decent run. It's not been in use recently because the Metrobus system was built, which obliterated the old station at one end, and before it could be rebuilt, the riverbank collapsed, and it's only just finished being repaired, so we're hoping to rebuild the line back down to the bonded warehouses fairly soon. Now, that means that we are limited to the quayside run at the moment. Some of the challenges that you do not experience at other railways are we are effectively on a continuous level crossing. You are not on a fenced, segregated railway line. You cannot take your eyes off the ball, so you have to be very alert of your surroundings. There are very strict speed limits in place on the railway. What's interesting is what started as an industrial site has obviously been regenerated now, and the public space has actually encroached on the railway space. It's not the way around. We didn't lay a railway line through a public area. All the cafes and all the lovely places to sit and have a drink have all come after the railway was there, so we've had to adapt accordingly. Of the two engines, the Avon side is by far the better steamer. You can basically take an IKEA tea light, you know, the little candles, you put that in the firebox and it will just steam all day on that. The Peckett is a lot harder. It's a lot less forgiving, not just from a firing point of view, but also from a driving point of view. The regulator is quite stiff at high pressure. When you open the regulator, it tends to be a sort of binary on-off. There's no lead-in. The Avonside will just take off and glide away. From a firing point of view, the coal we've been using for the last couple of years has been, I think, sourced from Poland, and it has been rubbish. I would say it is smoke in solid form. It's compressed smoke. So you put the coal on and it converts itself into smoke and goes out of the chimney. Now, it also has a high dust content. There are unusable small lumps and dust. Quite often on the footplate, I found myself carrying a metal bucket with me so that I could just filter out shovelfuls of this dust before I put any coal on, so that I wasn't just throwing a load of dust into the firebox, which would then just go straight out of the chimney and be completely wasted and make a lot of smoke. I was pouring these into the buckets and I was probably filling at least two a day, even on the limited line that we are operating on. It was rubbish. Putting anything more than three shovelfuls, in inverted commas, on at a time created a lot of smoke. This is not a good look, especially when you are in a city centre. A city centre that has a clean air zone. Obviously, we want to be respectful of our neighbours. We don't want to annoy our neighbours by creating excessive smoke. It's not a good look if you have the steam engine belching out clouds of black smoke in the city centre, with lots of people walking around trying to enjoy their day. Obviously, it is part of the experience. The use of heritage fuels and heritage machinery always comes with this kind of risk, but you don't want to have an excessive amount of smoke. The method that I actually developed in the end was to fire little and often, but even more little and often than a lot of people would think. I'm talking about two half shovelfuls on at a time. Leave that for a few minutes, let that burn off, put another two half shovelfuls, build it up at the back. Under the firehole door, you'd have quite a big, sizable mound of coal. Keep the rest of the grate kind of thin. What I also found was that we don't tend to like firing on the move because it means that the fireman then is not looking out ahead. Now, you have two guards at the end of the train who are also looking out for you, but they can't see behind them, so they can't see if people are getting too close to the train or people wearing headphones, for example, and looking at their phones, not looking where they're going. You need to be aware of your surroundings. The problem was that the vacuum ejector is running constantly when you're on the move. That is decreasing your steam pressure. You're also using steam as you're propelling the train along. Both locos are equipped with crosshead-driven water pumps. These were installed by the Port Authority at Avonmouth. They're not an original fit. It's quite unusual for an engine to have one of these. They have one injector on one side and the pump on the other. That means that as you go along, you can regulate the amount of water going to the boiler by opening the valve to the pump. So you can have it half open, fully open for a lot of water at a time, or off altogether to not put any water into the boiler. The good thing about this is that you can put a consistent amount of water into the boiler for every rotation of the wheel, which means that when you're operating back and forth on a limited section of line as we are, you kind of always know how much water you're putting into the boiler, but that also affects how much your pressure drops over that time. So the more water you put into the boiler, the more the pressure will drop. You have to counterbalance that and the vacuum brake, which is why I ended up firing on the move. I would pick specific points of the journey where I knew I could take my eyes off the train, turn around, chuck a few shovelfuls into the fire, shut the door, and then look back out as we were going along. Part of the problem was I had to create a very hot fire in order to burn the coal completely to avoid the excess smoke. This terrible coal that we were using had a very high ash content. The coal would release a lot of energy very, very quickly, but then would almost, within 15 minutes, it would fall into the ash pan. Now, it wasn't just ash at this point, it was still on fire. Part of the problem was, because I'm shoveling on a little bit every now and again, because I'm trying to fire little and often, I'm just putting more and more and more on, and that is clogging up the ash pan. What we ended up with was ashing out the locomotive three times a day, at least three times a day. You'd ash it out in the morning after you got it fired up, and as you're doing your oiling before you couple onto the train. Then you would ash out in the middle of the day, by which time it would be almost up to the level of the fire bars at the back. And then you would ash out at the end of the day as you were taking the train back to, you know, the sidings. This is because if you left all the ash in the ash pan, it would get so high and it would still be so hot that it would essentially cook the fire bars. And we've ended up with bent fire bars that look like a topographical map of the Andes. They are bent up, down, sideways. They're opening up holes between them, which lets even more coal fall through, which exacerbates the problem. It's not great. Fire bars are expensive. In order to try and avoid the smoke problems, what I found I ended up with was a double-decker fire. The whole grate was on fire, and the whole ash pan was on fire. No smoke, but using a lot of fuel and potentially damaging the ash pan, damaging the fire bars. It's not great for the locomotive and having to ash out during the day. And that was the only method I could find to get around creating excessive smoke. You don't want to end up chucking a load on because then you want to use the injector to put water into the boiler and you want more pressure to be able to operate the injector because you know that the injector will lower the pressure in the boiler whilst raising the water level, but you haven't got enough pressure to do the next journey because you know you're going to have to use the vacuum brake. When you're using the vacuum brake in the locomotive, you need more than about 110 psi, otherwise the brakes will start to come on. The problem is, in the Peckett, if you get over 140 psi, the regulator gets so stiff that it becomes very, very hard to drive slowly, and driving slowly is a huge part of our operation. So your ideal range is between 140 and 110. That's fine in one direction, but then at the other end of the line, you've got to make a fast turnaround, because you don't want to be creating smoke by shoveling under the apartments that have been built next to the railway line. You don't want all that smoke to be blowing in through their open balcony doors. So often you'd be saying to the guard, come on, hurry up, I really want to get going because we need to be going back so I can put some more coal in. But at that point, you need to have enough pressure to operate the vacuum brake for the whole duration of the trip. So it's very much a balancing act. That's what I mean about it being an unusual operation. I can't just shove coal in anytime I want. You have to pick your spots and you have to pick how much coal you put in and balance that with your water level and the pump and try not to use the injector because you're in a public space and you don't really want to splash everyone with hot water. So as an experiment, we have bought from CPL coal briquettes. This is not wildfire. A lot of people have been using wildfire. Our one we bought specifically because it was smokeless. We wanted to see if it truly lived up to its name and how that would perform and if we would be able to get away with our limited operation, slow speeds, not going very far. We wanted to see if that would be adequate. We know that it didn't have the same performance as wildfire, but the smoke might be enough to justify using this coal. I believe that these ovoids, which are shaped a bit like lumps of coal, and they look like coal too, look a bit like model coal that's been scaled up. I think that they're made with anthracite, pressed with olive husks and molasses to create a solid item. They are delivered, the ones we have were delivered in bags. Each bag was 25 kilograms. We wanted to measure how many bags we would use over the course of a working day if we were just operating our normal passenger trains. What I and the other firemen do in the morning is to get the engine started with wood, so we burn a lot of pallets, and then switch over to coal, once you get up to about 40 PSI, you don't really want to be putting coal on a cold fire because, again, you have the smoke problem and it will take ages to come round. You want to get the fire hot. Usually I put some water in with the injector before leaving the shed. And then I usually take a fair bit of wood to the pit when we go to oil round so that after you've been underneath an oiled round and everything, you can just chuck some wood on and get the fire going again before you start sticking more coal on it. You'd usually go through about half a bunker full of coal in a day, which is about half a ton. Maybe just slightly less than that, depending on circumstances. When using the ovoids, we started as normal, lit the fire with wood, got it hot, used the normal coal that was still left in the bunker, although it was filtering out all the junk and tipping that out, and using only the bigger lumps. Then after we'd oiled round, ashed out, done our vacuum test, I started the day with one bag of coal, which is 25 kilograms. What we thought would be a good test was to mimic our normal firing style. So I tried to build it up at the back of the fire, so that's just underneath the fire hole door. Built it up at the back, threw some down the front, spread it around a bit in the middle, but quite thin. Our firebar problems mean that one side of the fire is very hard to use because a lot of the lumps will just fall straight through. So at the moment, until we can get some new firebars in, which are on the way, but haven't been installed yet, the right-hand side of the fire is not great. We also decided to try the first train as we normally would. So we had the pump on halfway. I had the damper shut. I had the fire hole door ajar. I was usually running with the door slightly open or fully open to try and control the smoke by introducing secondary air into the fire. The damper was just a smoke switch with the old coal. You just open the damper and you instantly got smoke. So we tried to do the first train in exactly the same way. It was interesting. Over the course of the trip, the engine lost over 30 PSI, which is quite a lot for such a small journey. You could certainly see the pressure gauge dropping at some points. We got to the SS Great Britain hole to the other end and had a talk about it. So we decided to alter it for the return journey to be the fire hole doors shut. The pump got pushed back to being only a quarter on. And we decided to open the damper by one notch. Even with the pump on only a quarter, the water level started to recover during the day. As I said before, you're putting a consistent amount of water into the boiler, and as long as you're not using too much steam, then your water level will stay consistent or go up. What we also did was made sure that we shut off the steam feed to the vacuum brake when we weren't using it. So when we were parked in the station, the train was stationary, we shut the steam feed off to the vacuum brake because it's always running otherwise, it's always draining steam in some way. So we were trying to be quite conservative with the steam. With the newer technique, it was a lot better. It seems that primary air, rather than secondary air, is much better with the ovoids. What I did find was that I used just over one 25 kilogram bag of ovoids per trip. So when we got to the end of the line, I would quickly shovel half a bag in, straight away. Full shovelfuls going in. I'm just going to call it coal from now on because it's a bit easier. The coal would catch light, take a little while to come around, take a while to generate heat. Then we'd set off. I would try not to fire on the move, just to give it, you know, a good chance to burn through, and for the safety aspect as well. Then when we got to the other end of the line, at the SS Great Britain Holt, where we park in the shadow of many very, very nice apartments, I would shovel the rest of the bag in. So that would be, you know, half of a 25 kilogram bag would go in. Mostly along the back, with a few scattered around, depending on if there were any holes I needed to plug or anything else like that. It was quite consistent. I was very impressed. When they say this is a smokeless fuel, I was bowled over by how smokeless it was. Compared to the coal that we've been using, which, as I said, is just, you know, smoke in solid form, it was incredible. I could throw on, and I did throw on, an entire bag of coal, the ovoids, 25 kilogram bag. I could throw all of that into the fire, not in the bag, I had to take it out of the bag first, and it would produce as much smoke as the normal coal would do when you hadn't fired for a while and it was just burning down. It was amazing. No matter how much I threw in, there was barely any smoke came out, which is a great thing for our public image and a huge improvement. One of the biggest differences was the power release. The coal, the old coal that we were using, was, I mean, you would see a power release within, as long as you had a hot fire, within 2 to 3 minutes. So you had a very, very quick, oh, get me out of trouble fuel that you could just throw in and you knew we'd have some power soon, as long as you put enough in, but with the expense of having to get smoke and soot all over everybody. I was also very lucky that my driver on the day was driving very, very carefully. They were nursing the engine quite a lot. They were notching up when they could, so that they were making good use of the expansion properties of the steam. So it wasn't just in full forward or full back gear all the time. We weren't going particularly fast, well within the speed limits. The difference in the power release meant that the technique I developed over the course of the day was to start shoveling as soon as you pull into the station, because it will take a longer time to come around. You will get that heat, but it won't be the needle suddenly climbing up. You will have to wait for it. But whilst that meant that you spent more time waiting for the heat to come around, the fact that it was smokeless meant that you could shovel at the other end of the line. Whereas before we would try and avoid putting coal on at the other end of the line where we were in the shadow of the apartments and we were worried about creating smoke, I could throw a whole lot in knowing it would give me power for the way back and it wouldn't create any smoke whatsoever. I cannot emphasize this enough, how big a difference that makes. Mentally, to me as a fireman, the smoke anxiety, I had not realized before how much that was affecting me. How bad you felt when you were producing smoke out of the chimney and when you were creating huge sort of Royal Navy destroyer levels of smoke screen coming down the quayside. It didn't feel great and it made you feel bad, like you weren't doing your job properly. With this, that anxiety was completely gone. We didn't get any comments from people about the smoke from the locomotive. I think it gives a good public impression, which is great, especially when we're so much in the public eye, which hopefully counts towards the longevity of the museum and the working exhibits in general. With running the pump less, so it was only on a quarter when we were using the ovoids, was that I did have to use the injector a bit over the course of the day. When we were parked in the station, I used the injector to build the water level back up again. We had a little bit of a wobble because the linkage to the pump is a little bit worn out and needs refreshing, so that it wasn't actually turning all the way off when we wanted it to be all the way off and it was still pumping water into the boiler, and then it wasn't turning all the way on when we wanted it to be on. It was not pumping enough water into the boiler, so we had to use the injector a little bit during the course of the day to put a little bit of extra in and balance it out. When we were at the other end of the line, at the SS Great Britain Hold, we could have a longer stopover, which allowed time for the ticket collectors to go around and clip all the tickets, and for passengers to walk up and buy a ticket or take pictures with the engine. Everyone loves getting out and taking a picture when they're standing on the platform next to the engine, or having a look around the cab. Because we're waiting for the heat to come around from the ovoids, we had a little bit of extra time and we didn't have that anxiety of, well, we're sat here losing pressure and we don't want to make smoke and we've got to make a quick getaway. Over the course of the day, we used 13 bags of ovoids. I think we should have used 14 because on the very last trip, we actually resorted to throwing some wood in order to get back because we were running a bit low on pressure and we didn't have any bags with us. So we did chuck some wood in at the end of the day just to get us home. But probably 14 during the course of the day, which I think compares quite well. I think the fuel consumption overall is slightly higher than with the old style coal, the stuff you dig out of the ground. But this one, I think that the benefits of the public image cannot be overstated. It did require a little bit more foresight and knowing what you were going to do next. I'm quite lucky in that the railway that we operate on doesn't have a timetable. We run roughly on the hour and the half hour, but it's not a big deal if you run late or early or you go when ready. I mean, there's no point in keeping the train sat at the station when it's full of passengers. You might as well just send it, even if you're going early. And likewise, there's no point in sending the train off when it's got nobody on it, just to keep to an arbitrary timetable. You might as well wait till some people turn up. If it's raining, people tend to hide inside because there is no cover in the two passenger carriages. So, especially with the changeable weather we've been having recently, there's no point in running a train in the pouring rain. The ash. Comparing the ash to before, I did ash out 3 times during the course of the day, but that was mainly just to check on the progress of the fire and see how it compared to the old style coal. The ash was nowhere near the same. It was not building up to the level of the fire bars. It was only building up in certain spots, which usually was where there were bigger gaps in the fire bars that we need to sort out. It was really, really impressive. I think we're getting much more complete combustion of the fuel than we were getting with the old coal. We decided to use wood for the last journey because we didn't want to resort to using the old coal and sort of spoil the day. We thought, well, we've got through the whole day on ovoids and wood. Let's just try and finish off the day. And we managed it. It was really positive. Some of the quirks of using this new coal, apart from the fact that it's quite slow to release power, it does roll around quite a lot. Because we had it bagged, I was tipping bags, half a bag out at the time, onto the cab floor and chasing them around with the shovel, rather than putting them in the bunker, because we still had the old coal in the bunker. So I had the bunker door shut and was just tipping them straight onto the floor, which meant that, you know, it could be a bit of a hazard, but as long as you use it, it's out of the way. And I was keeping the bag at the side of the cab, so we didn't have too much on the floor at any one time. Most of the problem during the day was due to the issues with the pump, so we weren't getting a consistent amount of water in. It wasn't doing exactly as we predicted, so we'd have like a full glass of water 1 minute because the pump had been left on, even though it was registering as off, so we need to sort that one out. I think that's a problem with the split pin that we need to tighten up a little bit. But overall, the ability to put an entire 25 kilogram bag to recover your steam pressure onto the fire in one go, it felt amazing. It felt like I was, you know, actually operating the locomotive in industrial days. And I was able to just be a fireman again, which was quite something, really. One of the challenges we're going to face is that our two lines are quite different. One is mostly walking pace and then up to maybe a maximum of 10 miles an hour down the road section that goes to SS Great Run Halt. The other is 15 miles an hour, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're sustained at 15 miles an hour for about a mile's worth of running line, then you know you can be using quite a lot more pressure during that period and you will have to fire on the move. Thankfully, that is a segregated railway, so it's more traditional in that sense. But that means that our firing method will have to adapt as well. We don't know what that's going to be like. That's going to be really interesting to find out. But overall, I would say really positive. Some of the negatives are, I think that it is a shame to lose some of the heritage of using the original fuel that was designed for that locomotive. One of the most common questions I got asked as a fireman was, what are you using to power this? Is that real coal? Is this gas powered? Are you running on oil? Where's the coal? Can I see the fire? All those kinds of things. Now, the ovoids are great because they allow you to still use the same technique. One of our main things as a museum is, and why we don't use oil firing and that kind of stuff, is because we are trying to preserve the techniques of the working exhibits as well as the exhibits themselves. We're not just there as a train ride. We are there as an educational facility, education and entertainment in one. Therefore, we need to be showing and demonstrating and willing to demonstrate and explain how things are working. Using the ovoids and being able to shovel is still a positive, even though they're not the original fuel. I think that if we switched over to something else like the sawdust briquettes, it just wouldn't be the same thing because it doesn't look the same. It doesn't act the same. That, I'd say, is a big positive. The negatives are, I don't think you get the instant power, so you can't go, oh my God, and quickly shove some in to get away quicker. But it's a fairly casual operation. And in terms of timetabling, we don't need to worry too much about that. If this has been of interest to you, I'm really glad. I'm sorry it's been a bit of a ramble. I've just jotted down a bunch of thoughts because I did this last Saturday and we haven't done any more trains since then because on Sunday it was all rained off. But I'll be interested to hear how the other firemen get on and how they adapt to the new fuel as well and how they plan ahead and, you know, what their notes are. I think we have to consider these things as the future of heritage railways because there's only a finite amount of coal that we can get hold of. For whatever reasons, I don't want to get into a whole political thing about this and what's good and what's bad and whatever. We just have to face facts. It is hard to get hold of. It's expensive to dig out of the ground and it's expensive to transport. And there are other railways which use far more of it than we do. For our operation, it's very small. We are a very unusual operation and I don't think there's many other places that run a steam railway through the centre of a city, certainly not in the UK. I'd be interested to know if anyone can think of any others. And certainly not street running, which is what we're doing. And I just wanted to get my initial thoughts were and my excitement about the lack of smoke anxiety, which I know I've said it a bunch of times, but it was an amazing feeling to think, God, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I can just get on with my job. And I mean, I like giving insights as a volunteer. I know that it's not the biggest railway in the world. It's not got the most impressive engines and stuff, but it's my local railway and I really love it. And I put a lot of work into it and do the other volunteers and staff. I think it's something worth preserving. And I hope that this kind of fuel experimentation will be a part of that. And I look forward to using it again. If you've had any experience of using ovoids or other alternative fuels, I'd love to hear from you. Please, if you're watching this on the YouTube version, write a comment and let me know. I don't know if many people have actually gone into detail about techniques. If you've got any techniques or suggestions or anything else like that, I'd love to hear as well. Always willing to take advice on board from other crew members. And thanks very much, and I'll speak to you again soon.